I'm pulling my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the drive to work. But I have a special drive for you today because I have a carpooler with me. Say hello.
Hey, everyone.
It's Melissa DeToro who's joining us again.
Great.
She was here before, did two podcasts. You guys enjoyed it. So we're having her back. Which, by the way, is a big ask of Melissa because she had to drive here. Where do you live? You live not too far from Wizards.
Yeah, I live pretty close to Wizards in Kent, which is just south of Wizards, like 10 minutes away.
Right, so she drove 30 minutes or 40 minutes out of her way to come be on this podcast. So that's some dedication, which we appreciate.
Definitely.
People ask all the time why I don't have more carpool guests. And I'm like, because I don't live near anybody. That's the problem. Okay, so today we came up with a fun topic for today, which is magic firsts. So Melissa and I are going to share stories about, we made a long list of the first time we ever blank and a lot of different things having to do with magic, and we're going to share stories. So it's going to be a sort of a story podcast. Okay, so what is the first one?
All right, the first one is, when was the first time you heard of magic?
Okay, so when was the first time you heard of magic?
Okay, so this is a pretty funny story. It was back in like 93 when magic first came out, and I was a little kid. I was like 12 years old. So my dad was really into sports cards and comic books. We would always go to comic book shops and he would like, you know, look at stuff that he was into. And Magic was a new game. He'd heard of it. I never had. He said, oh, there's this really cool game. It's called Magic. Do you want some Magic cards? And I said, no, that game sounds stupid. So that was my first time.
That's your first time hearing it?
And, you know, it didn't look very interesting. So, nope, not interested in Magic. And that was that.
Oh, wow. So you first heard about Magic when it first came out.
Yeah, it was like, the game was pretty new. I don't really remember, it might have been beta. Like, I don't really know because, like, I was just, like, you know, very young and I didn't even know what it was. But my dad was just like, hey, do you want me to buy you some cards? And I was just like, nah, I don't really think I'd be into that.
Wow. So my first story, I worked, at the time I was working in a game store, the Gamekeeper, which Wizards would later buy, as a part-time employee, because I was going stir crazy. I was writing in Hollywood, and it's a very loner activity, writing, so I just wanted to get out of the house. So I decided to start working in a game store part-time, just because I thought it'd be fun. I wanted to do something that I could interact with people, and I like games, so I thought that would be fun. And people kept coming into the store asking about this game. And not all of them even knew the name of the game. They would just start describing it to me. And it, as more people came in and asked about it, I was fascinated. Like, what is this game? This, you know, because remember in the early days, this is back when Alpha, the game first came out, what Peter Atkinson, who was the CEO of the company, was driving up and down the West Coast, you know, going to individual stores to sell the game. And so the game really started with this really crazy word of mouth of just people would hear about it. And so it was very fascinating that my first experience was not like people knowing what it was, but like coming in and telling me what they knew about it and had I heard of the game. And at first I'm like trying to figure out whether I knew the game, and then like finally I'm like, no, I don't know this game. But that was the first time I ever heard of Magic. What's our next one?
Okay, the next one is the first time you saw Magic.
Okay, what's the first time you saw Magic?
Okay, I remember this too, and this was a couple years later, so I was in high school at that point, but like early high school, so like freshman year or something, and like there were these kids playing at my school, and I thought the game was nerdy, so I had no interest in learning how to play, and I called those kids nerds. I regret it, so you know, like, so I'm sorry about that to those kids back then. But yeah, that was when I first saw Magic.
Okay, so when I first saw Magic was, so I'd heard about it, people come to the store, were asking about it. So later that summer, I mean not much later, like weeks later that summer, I went to San Diego for San Diego Comic Con. I've actually been going to San Diego on and off for a long time. I was somewhere looking at something and somebody talked about it. And I'm like, wait, you have the game? You have the game? I've heard about this. And they're like, well, I don't have any for sale, but I own a deck. Would you like to see my deck? And I was like, yes. And so she showed it to me, and I just remember being fascinated by it. It was, you know, had all the art, and it was just, I held it for the first time. I didn't get to play it or anything. I just got to look at it. And I just remember going, wow, this is really cool. And then I tried to find it in San Diego, and nobody had it. I couldn't find it anywhere. Okay, so what's the next one?
First time you played Magic. All right, my first time I played Magic, this was another 2 years later, so this was in 97, And, like, I had friends who played Magic. Now, I was always a video game player. I played lots of, like, Super Nintendo games, like, all of the role-playing games and Sega Genesis and all that stuff. I was really into that, but I was never really into, like, non-video gaming. So these friends played Magic, and they were like, oh, you would really like this game. You should really learn how to play. And I was like, well, no, like I already, like, knew what Magic was from before, and I didn't want to play it then, so why would I want to play it now? And they're like, oh, come on, you just have to learn. Just learn. Come on, what else are we doing? Let's just learn how to play. So I finally gave in and said, fine, I'll learn how to play. So we sat down
and they taught me how to play. What set was out?
So this was in 97.
Okay, so like Mirage? Tempest.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the newest set was Tempest because, like, a little while later I bought Tempest packs. But, so anyway, I learned how to play and I was like, wow, this is the coolest game ever. Why didn't I learn this earlier? Wow, I'm really dumb. So, like, instantly fell in love with the game, and, like, the rest is history.
Yeah, it's funny. This is how you make me feel old. The first set you played was the first set I led.
Wow. Okay.
So, my story is... I went to a game convention. So, maybe, I don't know, a month after San Diego Comic-Con, I went to OrcCon, which is... I think it was OrcCon, which is one of the big conventions in Los Angeles. It was 20 years ago. And there was Magic for sale. I could actually buy Magic. And so I bought a starter and three boosters because I felt like, you know, how much do you spend on a game? That's about what you spend on a game. And then somebody offered to teach me. And so I said, oh, okay. And there were people there that were very excited about Magic, and they were trying to run some sort of little tournament, but I was just learning how to play. So I remember him sitting me down, and the first thing he said, or very early on, he's like, as you play, make sure to spread your cards out, because he had heard of a card that could, you know, you could flip in the air and it would destroy any card it touched. And he didn't know the name of it. He hadn't actually seen it. He'd only heard about it. But he was teaching me, and I learned from the very first time I was taught to spread my cards out in case I ever ran into this mystery card that he'd heard of.
Yep.
Which is Chaos Orb, for those that might not know. And he did a really, really bad job of teaching me. I mean, hats off for him offering to teach me. But I had no idea. Like, I walked out of that game not understanding how to play the game of Magic. I had some idea. I mean, he helped me a little bit, but he really did not... I had a lot of misconceptions. We'll get to that in a second. I had a lot of misconceptions about how to play.
Yep.
But the first time I technically played was learning how to play from the guy at OrcCon, which is where I bought my first pack. Okay, next.
All right. Next is first product you purchased. Okay, so I instantly fell in love with Magic. I wanted to buy cards right away. So I went to a local comic book shop. It was called Wade's Cards and Comics. And I just asked them, I was like, look, I want to get into Magic, what should I do? And the kid working there just, like, didn't really have any good recommendations for me. He was just like, well, this set called Tempest is new, so maybe that? Sure. And then any other one you want, doesn't really matter. And I was like, well, that one looks pretty, so I'll take that one. So it ended up being, I bought two starter decks. Starter decks do not exist anymore, but they're the equivalent of three packs, plus they come with basic lands. They used to be used for sealed decks. So I bought a starter deck of Tempest and one of Ice Age.
Yeah, sealed starter decks were, right, close to the equivalent of three booster packs and then 15 lands or so. I think actually the land ratio was slightly higher.
Like they were used for sealed decks, and back then you could only use the lands you opened, and you could do a five-land swap back then.
Yeah.
So, and they gave you six of each land. Sometimes you might get five of one and seven of another, but generally it was six of each land.
Right, so yeah, I think you got a little less. You got 60 cards. It was 60 cards total, of which was it six of each land, five of each land,
five or six.
I think it was five of each land because you got 20. I think you got 25 land.
Also, there was one point in time where it got up to 75 cards in the starter deck. I don't remember if that was Tempest or not, but for sealed decks, they ended up being 75.
Well, maybe they went up. That's possible. When they first started, Magic first started, they were 60 cards, and then maybe we had them go up. We eventually got rid of starter decks and just ended up with just booster packs. But anyway, so Tempest, that's your first thing you bought is Tempest?
Yep, Tempest and Ice Age were the first two starter decks I bought.
So the first thing I bought was Alpha. I bought a starter deck and three boosters. And the funny story is that's all I bought at the convention because I thought, like, that's all you would need. And I saw people at the convention buying boxes. Boxes of Alpha. I could have bought boxes of Alpha. I was like, why are people buying boxes of product? I didn't understand it. But I got into the game real quick. And so when Beta came out, I went and bought 2 boxes of starters and 2 boxes of boosters. Not all for me, but I knew that I needed to teach my friends how to play, to have people to play with. And the product went so fast, I knew that they couldn't find in the store. So I bought products that I could sell to my friends. And so I ended up selling product to all my friends to play. And then years later, when it was clear that none of them wanted to play, I bought it all back. So. Okay, all what's right. The next one?
The next one is the first rare you opened. Okay, so back then there were no color rarity symbols. So we had no idea what the rares were. Yep. So, and when I bought those starter decks, I had no idea that there even were rares. So, like, I just had no idea what was going on.
So, do you know what your first rare was, in retrospect?
I have some ideas of what they could have been.
Okay.
But back then, like, after my friends were like, oh, what rares did you get? I was like, rares? What's that? And they explained what rares were, and I was like, oh, I don't know. Let me look through my cards, and let me see what could be a rare. So, the card that I thought was a rare was Scaled Worm, because it was so big.
Oh, yeah.
It was a 7/6. I mean, come on, that card had to be rare, right? But it turned out that was a common. So, that wasn't my rare. And as for the actual first rare that I opened, one card that I remember being in the Tempest starter was Wrathy Dragon.
Okay, that is rare.
That's definitely rare. So I remember that. I don't remember the rest. Just Wrathy Dragon.
Okay, I remember. So back when we started, starter decks originally had 2 rares in it. By the time Tempest happened, they had 3 rares in it.
Yep.
So I had 2 rares. I remember this. I don't know. By the way, it wasn't at the time I knew they were rares. I just remember what I opened. So the 2 rares, and my first thing I ever opened was Dark Pact, which was an anti-card where, what does Dark Pact do? It allows you to, I don't remember what it does. Remember what Dark Pact does?
I don't actually remember what Dark Pact
is. It's an anti-card. I never really played it. Oh, and that's not true. I had a friend, there's a place I used to play for a while, where once a month he had an enforced anti-night. And then I played dark. I made a mono black deck full of anti cards and like little weenie cards that I didn't care if I lost. So I played Dark Pact, and I don't remember what Dark Pact does exactly. I didn't play a lot of Dark Pact. The other card though was Stasis. And I thought Stasis was the most amazing card because my opponent never untapped. How are they supposed to beat me?
I know.
They never untapped. And it took me a while to understand that I didn't untap either.
Oh my god.
So early on, I just thought it was this crazy card, and it was a crazy card, but it wasn't quite as crazy as I thought it was. Okay, what's the next one?
Alright, the next one is the first card that wowed you.
Okay.
Okay, so back when I first started playing, I had these 2 starter decks, I might have bought a couple of more booster packs. My decks consisted of all of the cards that I owned. Mm-hmm. That's it. It was all cards I owned .deck. I had about 3 different decks, like, split into, like, 2 colors. I had one was a monocolor deck, but I didn't really know what decks were. I just played all the cards I owned. So, the first real deck that I played against, it was a friend's deck. And, like, I would say the card that wowed me was, like, Ivory Tower. So, the way this deck worked was, played Ivory Tower, and then you played Land Tax. And so he would be searching for these lands. His hand was always full of cards, and he kept gaining life every turn. And once he had a second Ivory Tower in play, well, that's 6 life a turn. And then if he had, like, a 3rd Ivory Tower in play, so every turn he was gaining all this life, and I had no idea what was going on. I was like, I don't understand. Why can I never win? You just keep gaining all this life. And it was really frustrating.
Explain to people that might not know, Ivory Tower is an old, famous card, but people don't know what it does.
Ivory Tower is a 1-mana artifact, and it says at the beginning of your upkeep, you gain 1 life for each card in your hand above 4.
Yes, so this card was it's now restricted in Vintage to give you a sense of power level.
Is it?
Is it? Well, it was for a long time.
It was for a long time.
Maybe it's not currently. Yeah. It was for a long, long time.
There's, like, no way the card is very powerful now, right? It doesn't
That's
seem
probably
like
true.
It is. Like, I don't think it's restricted, although, like, I haven't seen that card be played in so long.
So Zach Dolan, who was the very first world champion, had Ivory Tower in his deck. The combination of Ivory Tower and Library of Alexandria, that's a card that lets you draw a card if you have 7 cards. So the idea between those 2 cards is Library of Alexandria makes you want to just keep a full hand, and Ivory Tower rewards you for having a full hand. Bertrand Lestrade, the guy who lost to him, said that it was the combination of those 2 cards that the 2 games that he drew both cards Bertrand had like a weenie red green deck and just couldn't beat that combination. And he attributed his loss to those two cards.
And one funny thing about that, about like how I was just like so wowed by this ivory tower, that wasn't even the powerful card. It was actually land tax.
Yes.
Because you just like fill your hand up every turn. You thin your deck out. Like you always have land to play every turn. Like that was actually the powerful card.
Yeah, nobody, for a long time I had a deck that ran off land tax, but nobody understood that land tax was the important part of it, that they always go after other cards. Although, for those that don't know land tax, it's a Legends card, it's an enchantment, and it says that every turn, if you have less land than your opponent, then you're allowed to go get three lands, is that right?
Three basic lands.
Three basic lands. And the funny thing is, there's a little guy on it holding a money bag, and people who play me used to always try to bolt it.
Oh, that's really funny.
I bolt the little guy. I'm like, well, it's not a little guy, actually. But and that card is funny. That was the first card where I realized the discrepancy between players, and that the players who understood that that was the powerful card were the good players, and the players who just didn't have any idea weren't as good. And it was the first card that really made me realize the differential between how people could understand the game. But anyway, so first, what were we asking here? First
card that wowed
me. Oh, first card that wowed me. So what happened for me was I had bought this box, or two boxes, of boosters. And so I sold some to my friends, but I had a lot left. And to keep me from opening them all up at once, because I knew I wanted to, I made a rule that said every day when I came home from work, or every day at the end of the day or something, I was allowed to open one booster pack. And I would spend a lot of time looking at the, okay, I just opened the booster. I'd look at every card. And so the one that I could not believe when I opened for the first time that I was just, it just wowed me, was Thicket Basilisk. So Thicket Basilisk is a 2/4 creature for 3 and a green, I think. So 4 mana.
5 mana.
It's 5 mana, but 3 green, maybe?
I believe it is.
Okay, maybe it's 5 mana. And it has the equivalent of Death Touch. It was written out at the time. And it didn't work on walls. You couldn't turn a wall into stone. But it was close to Death Touch. And the idea that it could just kill any creature it fought, I was like mind blown. You know, I'm like, any creature? How do you stop a creature that can kill any creature? And I just never seen anything like that before. It really, that's the one that really wowed me. Okay, what's the next one?
The first card you didn't understand.
Okay, so... What's the first card you didn't understand?
Alright, so first of all, as young Magic players, we played every card wrong anyway. Like, you always hear the stories of, oh, Dark Ritual, I get to search for 3 swamps. The way that I played Dark Ritual back then was I just put it out there, and every turn I just got 3 black mana every turn, you know? But everyone did that, so, like, that's not very interesting. So I have 2 answers to this question.
Okay.
The first one is... So, the first answer I have is Force of Will, and the reason why I didn't understand it is because this card was just so popular, and I didn't understand why. Like, it was 5 mana, all it did was counter a spell, like, who cares? Like, I just didn't understand. And it was, like a very, like, expensive card, and everyone wanted it for their deck, and I just didn't get it. And, like, I didn't really know why you would want to pitch a blue card from your hand to play it without paying its mana cost. That just didn't make any sense to me. So I couldn't understand why an uncommon, not even a rare, an uncommon would be this good or like this strong of a card. So
it's funny.
That's my first one.
It's funny, by the way. Real quick side story on Force of Will is I was working Wizards, obviously. Alliances was the first set I worked on, and at the time there were people in customer service who really believed that Force of Will, like, was a card that should never be published. It was just, it did something that Magic shouldn't do. And there were big fights about how, I mean, R&D really, we believed in the card and obviously backed it up. But there was a big fight in the company about, like, should this card even be made? So it's funny that you didn't, like, even understand it. And, like, you know, there's this, like, major fight in Wizards of, like, are we making the card that should never be made? So...
Yeah, okay. Like, I didn't really understand Force of Will until I started playing against it, and I was like, oh, that's why it's good. But at first, I was like, oh, I need to get Force of Will for my deck. Oh, I need Force of Will. Everyone just wanted Force of Will, and I didn't understand why.
So, I mentioned the card the first card I didn't understand was Stasis. Because Stasis, for those that never played Stasis, what does it cost?
It costs 1 blue.
One and a blue?
Yep.
So it costs 2 mana, one of which is blue. And it says, the lands don't untap or nothing untaps? Nothing untaps.
Yeah, you just
nothing skip
untaps. Untap.
You skip the untap step, but you have an upkeep cost of a blue mana. And because your stuff doesn't untap, it's kind of like cumulative, you know, because once you spend a blue, you can never spend that blue anymore. It's not going to untap.
Right.
I didn't understand that it affected you. I thought that, well, why would you ever play a spell that kept your own stuff from untapping? It just didn't seem like make sense to me. So one of the things we'll get to in a second, I think, is I had made two decks to play against each other because I didn't have people to play with early on. So I made two different decks that I would play against myself. And one of the decks was green. We'll get to that in a second. One of the decks was blue, and the blue deck had stasis in it. And I just couldn't beat it. I put stasis out, like, oh, game over. What can I do? I eventually figured it out. But I think I had to see someone else play it before I figured it out. The other thing that really threw me is after the person who tried to teach me at the convention, I got the rule book and I went through the rule book and I spent a lot of time reading the rule book trying to understand the rules. And the rule that threw me, interestingly enough, is I could not understand mana burn. Because I didn't have any cards that could put extra mana
right.
in your pool.
Yeah, I didn't
understand
so it either.
And so, I was like, why wouldn't you spend, like, you know, if you don't spend your mana, I'm like, why wouldn't you spend your mana? What circumstance do you have mana that you wouldn't spend? And it wasn't until I saw Mana Flare, like, you know, probably months later, I saw Mana Flare. And I remember when I saw Mana Flare the first time, I'm like, oh, that's why you can mana burn yourself. Cards like this exist. Okay, what's the next one?
Okay, so first, going back to the first card I didn't understand, I have a second answer to this question.
Okay.
And it's actually, it's not one card, but it's like a card interaction.
Okay.
So what happened was, have you ever played in a tournament and then, like, you're a new player and, like, your opponent is comboing off and you have no idea what's going on, all you know is you're losing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what happened to me. So this is actually my first tournament, and my, like, I was playing a creature deck. Like, I could only win by attacking with creatures, right? So my opponent had this combo that he played every turn, and every turn all of my creatures died. So it was Corpse Dance with buyback. Corpse Dance reanimates a creature, and buybacks you, like, can do it every turn. But the creature gets exiled at end of turn, okay? So theoretically you can only get one creature, then it goes away forever. And he would reanimate a Crater Hellion. And Crater Hellion is a 6-mana creature that does 4 damage to all your creatures, to all creatures in play. And he also had this card in play called Goblin Bombardment. So, so you would, like, sacrifice a creature to do 1 damage to something.
Right, Goblin Bombardment is an enchantment.
Right,
sacrifice a creature to do 1 damage.
So every turn he would Corpse Dance with buyback this Crater Hellion, kill all of my stuff, and then sacrifice it to do a damage to me, and then do it again next turn.
Right, so it wouldn't exile, it would go to the graveyard.
Right, and I just kept reading all the cards over and over, and I was like, I just don't get it, like, you're killing all my stuff every turn, but it says you have to remove it from the game, but you're not doing that. I don't understand what's going on. Like, why is this happening? Why aren't you removing it from the game?
Judge!
And I don't think there was a judge in that tournament either. It was, like, you know, a very, like, small thing. But anyway, like, he was just like, oh, when I sacrifice it, I don't have to remove it from the game. And I was like, huh. Okay, that kind of makes sense. So, that is my story of that interaction that I didn't understand.
Okay, what's the next one?
All right, the next one is the first deck you built.
Oh, the front. Okay, what's the first deck
okay.
you built?
So, like I said before, my first decks were just like, oh, I have white cards. I'll just put them in this white deck. Like, they didn't have synergy or anything. But the first real deck that I built was an elf stompy deck. So, just like, it was basically like all the elves I owned and all the green creatures I owned. So, the deck had Llanowar Elves, Priest of Titania, Multani's Acolyte. It played, like, pump spells like Giant Growth, Elvish Fury, because, you know, elves. And
yeah.
Elvish Fury gives +2/+2 and also has buyback. And Elven Right.
Real quickly, buyback for those. Buyback means you can spend extra mana, and if you do, instead of going to the graveyard, it goes back to your hand. It was one of the major mechanics of Tempest.
Yep. Elven Right, which was another elf card, like, because it had Elven in the name, and that put a +1/+1 counters on all your creatures at sorcery speed. Not a very good card, but, you know, it fit in the elf deck. And then I had one Gaia's Cradle, so I had that in the deck. I had...
Gaia's Cradle is a land that taps for green mana for every creature you have.
Yep, very powerful card. I had, like, a Child of Gaia, which is, like, a 7-mana... It's a 6-mana 7/7 trampler that had an upkeep cost. Like, that was, like, my giant creature in the deck. So, basically, it was just, like, I was going to this tournament, and my friend was like, oh, you need a real deck. You don't have any real decks. So he just looked through my collection for me and was like, oh, like, you can probably build a Stompy deck. So, like, Stompy is not a term that we use now, but Stompy was the term that was used for just, like, green beatdown decks. Like, back then, most Stompy decks played Pouncing Jaguar, Albino Troll, Cradle Guard. They're, like, you know...
Rogue Elephant back then?
So this was not in that standard format back then. Okay. Like, the standard format was Tempest plus Urza Saga.
Okay. Rogue Elephant is Mirage.
Yes, yeah. Okay. So I built a Stompy deck built around elves. So, like, the coolest thing I could do is go, like, turn one Llanowar Elf, turn two Priest of Titania, add extra mana, and play a Gaia, a Child of Gaia. So that was the cool thing that I could do in that deck. And
so, by the way, real quickly, I think it's a little bit trivia. I think Stompy comes from the original version of the deck had a card called Rogue Elephant, which was a 3/3 for one green mana, but you had to sacrifice a forest. And the idea was it was Stompy because elephants stomp on you. I think that's where the name comes from.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yep. Sorry. Little extra trip there. Okay. So you made an elf deck.
Yep. So basically, I learned, like, I just learned, like, about mana acceleration because, sure, I had Llanowar elves in my green deck, but I didn't realize how powerful it was because, like, the deck was just a pile of cards I owned before. And I, you know, rarely drew it on turn one, but, like, this deck actually taught me, oh, you can, like, you know, do things on turn one that lets you play all these powerful cards earlier in the game than usual. So that was a pretty cool experience for me. And I actually tweaked that deck for a very long time. And, like, by the end of that standard format, I had, like, four Llanowar Elves, four Priests of Titania. I cut all the bad cards. I had, like, Weatherseed Treefolk, which I thought was a really cool card back then. Weatherseed Treefolk is a 5/3 trampler for 5 mana, and it had this, like, kind of undying ability when it, like, if it would go to the graveyard, instead return it to your hand. So
right.
It just never
so
it's dies.
So hard to kill. Okay, so it's interesting that you had mono green. My first deck was mono green.
What a coincidence.
So, by the way, it's very interesting to see how many first decks are mono green. We've learned from a lot of market research that green seems to be the most popular color for new players. What's the number two most popular color for new players?
My guess would be white.
Red.
Like, my guess was white because, like, white is, like, simple. Like, the creatures are easy to understand.
Direct damage is just so compelling to new players, though.
Yeah, that's also true.
I think white might be number three, but red for sure is number two. Green and red are by far the two most favorite for new players. But anyway, when I first started, okay, so when I opened up my first cards, similar to your experience, I had a Crawworm. So a Crawworm is a 6/4 creature for 6 mana, I think, 5 and a green, is that right?
It's a 4.
Or 4 green-green, 4 green-green, I mean.
Yep.
And so I saw that card, and once again, there was no rarities or anything. That to me was just the most awesome card I owned. It was a 6/4 creature. And, like, the closest I had to it was, like, a 3/3. I had, like, 1/1, 2/2. Like, back in the day, we kept creatures a little bit smaller. We let them get a little bit bigger over time. But I opened up all my cards, and, like, I had 1/1s and 2/2s and 3/3s and 1/2s and 2/3s. And then I had 1/6/4. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, that, you know, 6/4, I hit you 3 times or 4 times, you're dead. Yep. You know? And so I also didn't understand that you could have more than one color. Like, my idea was, oh, well, you put all the cards of a certain color in, and that's what you play. And the idea that you could have two different colors never dawned on me until I saw a dual land. And then, like, why? Oh, I guess you could have more than one color in your deck.
Yep.
It's amazing, by the way. Early Magic, there was no websites to read. I mean, like, there were Usenets. There was, like, bulletin boards you could go on. But there wasn't, like, deck technology you could read. Nobody knew anything. And so, the early days was kind of like everybody was just a very young, inexperienced player because everybody was inexperienced. Nobody played for long. So there was nobody sort of teach you, like, oh, card advantage or card tempo or, you know, all the concepts that we now understand. That wasn't something you could just read about. There weren't articles or anything about it. In fact, the first Duelist didn't come out until January of 94, and even that was pretty simplistic. Like, there wasn't a lot of high-level strategy in it. So I made a mono green. I don't remember what was in it other than it was basically every green card I owned, I think, because I had to make a green deck. Now, originally, because I read the rules, decks were 40 cards, not 60 cards.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a 40-card mono green deck. And then I didn't have anybody to play with, so I made a second deck so I could play against somebody, and that was a mono blue deck. I'm not sure why I did blue. Maybe because stakes looked weird to me. I'm not sure. I played this mono blue deck. My mono blue deck didn't have any cohesion to it. It just had stasis. So the deck really couldn't beat the green deck except if I got stasis out. And because I completely misunderstood stasis, it was broken. So my early matches were basically either the green deck would win or the blue deck would draw stasis. That was my matchup against myself. Okay, so what's the next one?
Next is the first card you traded for. Okay, so this is actually a pretty interesting story. So I never really traded at first. I just, you know, bought some packs, improved my decks or whatever. But once I started going to, like tournaments and stuff, and I had my green Stompy deck, I thought, you know, like, maybe I could try trading or whatever. But anyway, Urza's Legacy had just come out, and Urza's Legacy is the first set that had foils. So I bought a couple packs, opened them, I got some foils. I was like, what even are these things? This is so weird. Why would they even make these cards? Like they're the same... Like, the foil version is the same as the non-foil version, so what's the point? So I didn't really get the point
it's
of
foils. Shiny!
Like, yeah, like, that didn't matter to me because, like, the game was for playing, right? So to me, like, the foil just didn't make any sense.
Yep.
So anyway, I go to the game store, and there's this dad and two sons, and they're just, like, aggressively trading for all the foils. They're trying to collect the foil Urza's Legacy set. So, like, got any foils? They're just, like, trading for these foils. And I'm like, oh, well, I have foils. I just opened some packs earlier, and I got some foils. I had a foil Brink of Madness, which was a rare. I don't remember what exactly it did, but it made the opponent discard their hand in some way. I think it was, like, not a very good card. But
yeah, I believe a year earlier we had started putting rarity symbols on. I think...
Yeah, versus... No, actually, Exodus was the first set that had the rarity symbols.
Right, yeah. And so you could tell what your rares were.
Yep.
And this is pre-Mythics. Mythics didn't happen till what, Shards of Alara?
Yeah, I believe so,
So the Mythics didn't exist yet. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I had a foil Brink of Madness, and the other foil I had was Granite Grip, which is just, like, not a very strong magic card. It's just, like, I think it's it gives your creature +1/+0 for each amount when you control or something. It's not a very good card. But anyway, it was what I opened. So these kids and this father, they just were like, oh, we really, really want to trade your foils. We just want to collect the foil set. And these kids, they memorized all the collector numbers of the set. They're like, oh, Treetop Village is number, like, you know, 200 or whatever it was, I don't know. But it was like, wow, these kids memorized the collector's number just because they're trying to collect this foil set. So anyway, they were just so interested in these foils that, like, I could not trade them. I didn't really want them. So I ended up picking up, like, a Gaia's Cradle, which was really cool. Like, it's a very powerful card now. Back then it was just like, you know, it was a good card. So
it's something for you to understand who might not have been around for Urza's Saga. Urza's Saga block was broken.
Yeah,
there
also,
were so many crazy cards in that block.
Yeah, so there was a time, this was like, I was playing Magic back then, but not tournament Magic, so I missed the entire brokenness that was Urza's Saga. Like, all the cards were banned by the time I started getting into Standard. So I missed all that. But anyway, Gaia's Cradle was a pretty strong card.
Which to show you how crazy strong Urza's Saga is, Gaia's Cradle is a land that taps for green mana for every creature you have. So you have five creatures, like, taps for five green mana.
Yep.
That's not broken enough to get banned in Urza's Saga.
No, that did not get banned, no. The card that got banned was Tolarian Academy, a card that I owned and I thought was cool, and I put it in a blue deck, but I didn't know how broken it was. It's a land that taps for blue for each artifact you control.
Yes.
You're allowed to play one of it in your Vintage deck.
Yes, that card... It's funny, Gaia's Cradle, by modern standards, is crazy broken. It's really good. Like we would never, ever put that in a standard legal set. But it wasn't anywhere close to the level of cards we had to ban. Urza's Saga was not the highlight. I was actually a developer at the time, one of the developers. And we actually got chewed out by our CEO after the set came out because we screwed up some. The set was not as balanced as it could have been.
Oh, geez. Okay. And then the other card I traded for during the same trade with these kids was a Weatherseed Treefolk, which I mentioned earlier. It was like, I thought this card was really cool. I wanted to get four of them for my deck. So picking up another one was pretty cool when I was only trading away some foils that I didn't care about. But what I learned that day was this game is not only for people who like to play the game. Sometimes you like to collect the game, too. And I never even knew that before.
Yeah, it's very interesting to interact with collectors. I don't know. I mean, some of the listeners, I'm sure, are collectors. It's a whole other facet of the game, and it's really interesting to interact with people who, like, their number one thing isn't even playing the game. Their number one thing is collecting the game. And I've met a lot of very interested collectors that have very... Like, some of them just try to collect one of everything, but some people are like, I collect this thing, you know? Like, one of my coworkers used to collect every printing of Lightning Bolt. Actually, do you know Mike Dunay?
I don't actually, no.
So Mike Dunay, he was a judge for a long time, and he worked at Wizards.
I've heard the name before.
Anyway, he that was his thing, is he collects every printing of every Lightning Bolt. Every language, like, every printing of it. And he had a... He had an impressive collection. You wouldn't think there was that many different Lightning Bolts, but there were. And he had them all, so... Anyway, I see that we're getting close to Wizards. So what happens is Melissa joins me. She has to drive all the way to my house. And so I feel it's completely unfair to make her just do one podcast since we have to drive home. Yeah. So I don't often do drive from work, but we will. So we're going to do... and we're nowhere near done. We have a list of things to talk about. We're nowhere near done. We have many more firsts to talk about. So the plan here is we are going to continue and do part two on the drive home today. So there's a part two to this.
And part two will continue with what was the first card you traded for?
Yes.
You didn't say yours.
I know. I, by the way, have a crazy, crazy... The craziest trade I ever made was the earliest trade I remember making. And it is such a crazy trade. I will tell you the story on the next podcast. It is... And I feel bad in retrospect because it was... you'll hear the story. But anyway, I have a crazy trade to talk about. Okay, so we're now in the parking space, which means this is the end of our drive to work. And so instead of talking magic, it's time for us to be making magic. So we'll see you guys soon.
See you.
Ciao. Bye.